it's like to be on the other end of this phenomenon and how we can navigate righteously through it. We can learn so much from Jesus about his relationships. As the Son of God, he was called into a life of service, love, and availability. But notice he didn't open his heart to everyone. That he guarded. He could speak to 5,000, but he came home to 12. And within those 12, there were three he was closest to, and out of them, just one was closer than a brother. Proverbs 4:23 warns us, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Jesus was the perfect example of this. Somehow it seems this has gotten out of check lately. We now live in an age where we can speak to 5,000 people at once, but we've simultaneously opened ourselves up to being judged and spoken to by those same 5,000 voices. When we absorb thousands of comments on the internet from people we don't even know, we aren't doing a great job of guarding our hearts, are we? If we give space to every social media criticism or unwanted negative email, we are opening up precious parts of ourselves to be shaped by people who would rather break us down than build us up. Not everyone should get a voice in your life. Hear me here. This bears repeating. Not everyone should get a voice in your life. Since our hearts determine the course of our lives, I think it's time we stand up and fight for them fiercely. Friend, we would never allow someone to walk into our homes and say the things to us that we allow to fill our hearts when we engage online. In these times, we need to stop worrying about what the person on the other end thinks and fight to guard our own hearts. In my life, this has involved hiding people on social media, unfollowing people, and sometimes even unfriending them. It means filtering emails so the negativity doesn't make its way into my mind and then to my heart. It disturbs me that I even have to write about this topic. But when I'm watching these things destroy the hearts of people I love, I can't not say something. As trivial as all of these boundaries sound, I beg you to try some of them and just see if it makes a difference in your heart and your perspective. At one of our pursuit retreats, I listened as an attendee told one of our speakers she had to unfollow her on social media. Seeing the speaker's happiness in her marriage was too painful for this attendee as she endured heartbreak in her own marriage. It was a light bulb moment for me, as I realized we don't just need to guard ourselves against negative people, hurtful words, or distasteful rants, but also from things that can spurn our own hearts into self-pity, comparison, jealousy, or discontentment. I was so proud of this gal for admitting her limits, and even prouder that she had taken action to guard her own heart. It's not easy to admit to ourselves that the girl with the perfect house or perfect marriage or 8 babies or thriving businesses thousands of miles away is causing envy and jealousy in our hearts, but this is a reality for many of us. It's times like these where we spot the ugly in our own souls, that we must take action to protect what is precious to us, our very heart. If you constantly find yourself getting hung up on a specific person or circumstance that you just can't stop thinking about or bringing up, it might be healthiest for you to put some distance there. If your mind is spinning out of control because of the negative things you're reading and allowing in, maybe you should put up some boundaries and take some steps to not see those things. And if you find yourself longing to have your own 12, or your own 3, or your own 1, but you've been lost in trying to prove something to the 5,000, maybe it's time to refocus. Maybe it's time to lay down the voices of the internet and focus on the relationships with people who are praying for an invitation instead. Imagine if every one of us listening to these words stopped scrolling through others' lives and started sowing into our own. I can almost picture it now, a world full of intentional relationships, uplifting in-person conversations, and full tables. A world where no one has to celebrate the upcoming birth of their child alone or turn another year older at a table for one. We were created for connection, woven with the need for invitation and belonging. It's not about building a massive organization, a well-loved brand, or a thriving business. While those are good things, getting it out of balance might be costing us the very best of things. I'm starting to learn more and more that this whole intentional life I'm trying to cultivate is wrapped up in loving well, one invitation at a time, and living life as if the hearts in our homes and people in our communities are the treasure that matters most of all. Chapter 8. Lean In. Every person's life is a fairy tale written by God's fingers. Hans Christian Andersen. I always imagined it differently. The best parts of my childhood meshed with the joy and peace that a God-filled marriage brings to a home. It laid out like a fairy tale with Isaac's blue eyes and my jet black ringlet curled babies in my mind. I pictured a long, tree-lined driveway full of cherry blossoms and a tire swing hanging from the giant oak just west of the front porch. The boys would run there, and a big dog would chase them as the field dust whisked off their boots, meeting the sun as it kissed the horizon. Isaac and I would watch them and smile. We would hold hands on the steps as the evening rose and the day said goodbye. There would be sun tea and laughing and boys jumping dirt bikes as my girl twirled and danced in her floral dresses. It would be stable and true. A messy mix of sweet country melodies and 90s rap lyrics would rumble through our walls, sometimes at the same time. It would be cozy and worn and perfect. It would be home. And so perfectly us. But that's not exactly how it all played out. When I was 8 years old, my family sold their 50-some acres in the woods and moved to the city. And by city, I mean a bustling metropolis suburb that teetered between 1,000 and 1,500 people. It was traumatic, to say the least. My brothers and I were used to the freedom and imagination and adventure that came with living on our own wild west frontier. We were used to being gone for hours, trudging underneath towering evergreens and wet, dripping moss to build pirate ships on pieces of plywood we'd thrown on the wild blackberry bushes, and then eating food from the barks of the trees. When we moved to town, the adventuring slowed and slowed until there was no longer a trace that it ever existed. We would still play in the trees in the backyard, but there's something different about exploring when you're surrounded by fences. You can really only go so far. I remember climbing to the very tip-top of the cedar trees that lined our fence. There, with sappy hands surrounded by rich-smelling branches 30 feet above the ground, I found something completely magical. And after a while, without even realizing it, that branch at the tip-top of that cedar out back became my safe place. I would sit there mesmerized as the sun set over the mountains and I watched the town slowly shut down for the night. It was peaceful there, and I guess it was a small glimpse into my heart, too. How I always wanted to see beyond the fences. How my heart couldn't handle being reined in or not being able to say goodnight to the sun. I longed for freedom even then. I longed for a life without the restriction of fences or boundaries or the close proximity of neighbors and their invasive noises. When I grew up, things would be different, I declared to my young self. When I could make decisions on my own, I would choose the ones that allowed me to feel peaceful and alive and free again. The ones where I would twirl with my dress and let the field dust dance off my boots, too. But being a grown-up is different from what my adolescent self had imagined. It makes me understand Peter Pan a little bit better, too. The older I get and the more life hits me, the more I understand this desire for a place where I don't have to grow up. A place where I wouldn't have to watch life destroy my dreams. A land where I could make the rules and control the outcome, and maybe fly a little bit too. When you find yourself waking up as a grown-up person with the weight of the life that has been handed to you starting to suffocate your soul, Neverland starts to feel a whole lot more inviting. I remember getting out of the shower one day after having a lengthy chat with God, because that's the best place for conversations like that. And I just wept. I lay on my bed in a blubbering mess of tears. We had 21 days until our house closed, and we needed to be boxed up, accounted for, and out of our house. But we had nowhere to go. I try really hard to wrap my mind around the Father Heart of God in moments like these, and as I reflect on this story now, it seems a bit surfacey compared to some of the faith-hitting-the-wall situations we've walked through in recent years. But for the sake of this narrative, we'll just stick to this story. I feel like a gigantic brat admitting this, but there have been many times in my walk with the Lord, including this one, when I've thought to myself, I would never treat my kids like this. Have you ever felt that way when waiting on a prayer? If I was going to churn a dream in my children's hearts, I would most certainly have a plan in my head to help it come to fruition, and I would most definitely keep them filled in along the way so they knew I was taking care of it. But in this faith journey, I'm learning more and more that God doesn't exactly work like that. And even though I know in my head that He is good, our looming homelessness and years of unanswered prayers made me feel all sorts of forgotten as this event unfolded. As dramatic as this sounds, at this point, I barely had a shred of hope left. And it wasn't only this particular situation pushing me over the edge into a faith crisis. It had just been too long, too much, too many unanswered prayers, too many disappointments, too many abandonments, betrayals, and broken dreams over the course of the previous 7 years. I was exhausted and tired of hanging on just one more time, especially when the answers before weren't what I'd expected or prayed for. It was all just too much. I was just done. Have you ever been there? This was the summer between our son's second and third grade year. He was 8. The same age I was when I moved for the first and last time during my childhood. But instead of experiencing his first move, he was on his 6th in 8 years. I can't even process how far our reality was from the dreams I'd had for my family as a newlywed. Every moving truck brought with it another bucket of tears, adding to the river of my continually breaking heart. Why? Just why? It was never supposed to be like this, I thought to myself. We were supposed to have a home, singular, one our children would call theirs and drive by with their children in 30 years, telling them of all the stories from one backdrop of their childhood. They weren't supposed to have a rabbit trail of memories and bedrooms and addresses that held no foundation and gave them no structure to their little souls. It was all just supposed to be so different. I read a quote once that said, "I think what can mess with our happiness the most is the idea in our heads of what our lives are supposed to look like." and I can't articulate anything that would be more spot on for me. When what we imagine we will have slams into the reality of what we wake up to day after day, it holds the power to really mess with our hearts, or even take us out completely if left unchecked. If you're a dreamer like me, you may have had scrapbooks and notebooks filled with the magazine clippings of how you wanted your life to go. Mine always held photos of white barns, fields of grazing horses, and sometimes lakes. I had dreams of renovating an old farmhouse where we brought home all of our babies and tucked them in for their whole lives. And I imagined we'd do the very same thing when our grandkids came to visit. I pictured our home full of lifelong friends and family, and imagined we would host weddings and events by the barn as the sun set. But none of that has happened. And worse, our dreams have been raked over the coals in the last 12 years. Every preparation, every guard, every plan we had made for our family to ensure that we would get the lives we dreamed of has somehow fallen through our fingertips. But honestly, it feels more like they got ripped from my tightly gripped fingers than loosely falling. From the housing crash in 2008, to perfectly good cars breaking down on the side of the highway twice in a row, to contracts that weren't upheld, to a flood destroying everything in its path, to having products in our shop stolen and copied, and worst of all, to having people come into our lives with huge promises that turned out to be a series of lies. It felt as if every aspect of our dreams was bait for the enemy to come eat it away. For years, I sat at my tent in the camp of resentment and bitterness. I was so angry with God for stripping away the things I wanted most that I couldn't even see that he had filled my life with the things I actually needed most. And this was very scary, very dangerous ground. Through everything that had unfolded in our lives, this verse kept popping up in my path, and it started to feel like it was singing a familiar tune. In their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps. Proverbs 16:9. I had gone my entire life reading this verse wrong. Somehow I had made it up in my head that it actually read, a man plans his way and the Lord helps him get there. The fact that we could be doing what's right, tithing, seeking wise counsel, setting up IRAs, and trying to be good stewards of all the things, and not end up with the results we had set out to attain was beyond me. I simply didn't understand how in God's economy, 2 + 2 didn't always equal 4. Along the way, I planned to have 4 kids, build my dream farm, adopt, and have a thriving business and a solid community of friends. We were following God and doing our best to honor him in everything we did. So in my mind, that should equal life going peachy and things turning out the way I wanted, right? Not so much. The way it actually unfolded was more like a constant crippling of our dreams and a slam door to many things we tried to pursue. I started multiple businesses that I thought were great ideas, but they failed miserably. We poured our life into a church and friendships in a community that turned out to be a dangerous, twisted web of spiritual abuse. We ate well and lived active lifestyles, and still my body continued to let me down and cause me so much pain I could no longer do the things I used to do. Turns out, as I should have known, Proverbs is right. I can plan all I want, but it's the Lord who will decide if something is going to go forward or not, and in what season it will or won't be successful. Over the past 12 years, I've started a photography business, a mentoring program, a magazine, a clothing line, a home shop, an international women's ministry, a cross-country workshop tour, a journal company, a kids devotional line, a conference for creative businesswomen, a dream wedding giveaway community, an educational wellness community, a directory of Christian businesses, an online course for how to start businesses, and I'm pretty sure at one point I was also a Mary Kay lady. The thing about all of these ventures is that I started them almost all the same way. I built incredible websites, sought out ambassadors to help spread the word, hired an insanely awesome video and photo crew, checked off all of the boxes on running a successful launch, and still, the outcomes of each of these companies couldn't have been more opposite of what I intended them to be. The clothing company I started was called Ruby Apparel, and I absolutely adored the whole thing. It was years ago, long before cute Christian shirts were a thing. The website was one of the best we had ever designed. We had put together the most insanely beautiful photo and video shoot on the beaches of Santa Barbara with our adorable mock-up tees and tanks to add to the website, and I was smitten. It was all going incredibly well, until it wasn't. A few weeks before launch, I realized I had no desire to run a clothing company with the production option that was currently available to me. I didn't want to deal with inventory or shipping or returns or items that didn't fit well. And although it was something that I could do and really enjoyed pieces of, it wasn't something I felt we were supposed to move forward with. That business never made it to launch day. And looking back, I am so, so thankful it didn't. I've also launched other products and businesses that I was super excited about, but when they launched, they landed with an absolute thud. No one bought the products, and I kept pouring money into creating new ones, thinking that someday everything would just click and we wouldn't somehow make it successful. Sometimes I got the hint quickly, while other times it took me years to realize my efforts were in vain and the project was obviously something God is closing the door on. And then there were things like Pursuit and our children's quiet time journals, Adventures with Archer, and starting a business with Young Living that seemed to be overflowing with his favor. All of those endeavors were businesses we never meant to start in the first place, but we stepped out in faith after God's prompting and they took off like wildfire. It's things like these that make us feel invincible and smart. And let's just face it, the success feels kind of amazing. It's almost as if we have some sort of magic sauce or special secret that makes us so successful. But the truth is, we didn't do anything special. God did. At certain times, our efforts and God's will align, and things we never thought would amount to anything end up changing everything. I've heard stories like this over and over and over, and I think it's time we pay attention to them. My good friend Elizabeth often says, leaning takes trust, but pushing takes effort. Sometimes we start something because we have a little inkling, and we need to trust that God is going to do something with it. Other times we start something because we just want it to work so badly. It's needed in the marketplace, and it's such a good idea. But instead of things flowing effortlessly and seemingly falling into place, it feels as if we were trying to push a boulder up a mountain. And it turns out that was never a boulder we were supposed to be pushing in the first place. Or maybe it was. We just tried to push it at the wrong time or in the wrong season. That was my farm dream. I had this idea in my head of exactly how my life would play out. I had big plans about what business ventures would work, what our friendships would look like, and how our lives would play out. And when it didn't end up that way, I became a prisoner to my own pity party. What derails our destiny most is coveting what we would rather have for our lives instead of being thankful for what God has given. In my experience, it seems that sometimes God places his hands on the ventures we pour our hearts and time into, and other times he just doesn't. There's no foretelling it, no trying to figure it out before he decides to reveal it. It's just how he seems to be working things in my life, and maybe in yours too. It's not because of something we do or don't do, or a way we failed or succeeded. It's just his divine plan, playing out the way it needs to so that he can ultimately carry out his very best for our lives, even when it makes no sense to us. I have no idea why certain things I've started have failed so miserably, and just as startling, why other things succeed beyond my wildest dreams. Sometimes God opens doors and other times he closes them. And as hard as it can be to come to terms with this, our job is simply to listen, to pay attention, and to follow his leadings. As painful as this picking up and laying down dance has been along the way, I've learned that we will only be able to embrace our fullest calling when we surrender all of our pieces, dreams, and gifts to be used as God pleases. We must be willing to lay down the life we thought we wanted and pick up the one he has for us. And you know what happens when we do? The dreams we once had for our lives suddenly pale in comparison to the plan he has laid out for us all along. I just couldn't see this when I was holding my own dream so closely, so tightly. It was almost as if my dream for my life was something I worshiped more than I did his face. But I'm learning now that we've got to listen and pay attention. We need to open our eyes to which doors God is opening in our lives and which ones he's closing. Because friend, I know wherever he's leading us, it's going to be good, because that's just who he is. The life I have now is nothing like I imagined it would be back then. Our kids are spread out unevenly and far apart. We haven't adopted yet. I don't even know if that is something we will ever do, or a dream I must lay down as well. I simply don't know. We live in a 70s ranch house, which is my least favorite architectural style. Our friendship circle is small, but deep, and it looks vastly different than I thought it would. I'm doing a job I never, ever thought I would do, and actually ran from for nearly a decade. It all looks alarmingly different from the life I planned out on those dream boards with my friends. But once I stopped clenching my fists and banging them against his chest over all of the losses, I started to see that this different life holds beautiful blessings too. There's something so deeply fulfilling, so joyous about following God into the scary things he asks of us and setting our preconceived notions aside. It's a sign of bravery and courage to drop your hands to your side and look up to the sky and surrender, breathing in what he has given and thanking him for it. Even if it's not what we would have planned for ourselves, it's in following of the one, not in the forging of our own path, that our truest happiness lies. Our purpose is found, and the smile on our face returns. But we must open up our hands and our hearts and our dreams and be willing to let go, lean in, and embrace this life he's planned for us. So get ready, friend, because when you finally close the door on what you wanted your life to be like and walk through the door of what God is inviting you into and the goodness he has for you there, absolutely everything changes in a really good way. Chapter 9. I Can't Survive. The best way out is always through. Robert Frost. The nurses were buzzing around, telling me to hold it in. Whatever you do, don't push, they said. Yet all I could do was close my eyes and try to tune it all out. My body heaved and shook involuntarily as it took over to bear a miracle. I couldn't stop it or hold it in as they demanded I try. I started to bite the rail of the hospital bed as my formerly sane self bombarded my mind. Biting the rail? Are you serious? This is disgusting. What barbarian would do such a thing? Don't you know how appalling this is and how germ-infested? Gross. I could feel my body tense up in pain and rise off the table as I death-gripped the hard plastic bed rail. And then in a moment of pure glory, my body released me back to the table like a puddle of jello for a brief glimpse of sweet relief. I can't do it, I said. I just can't. The pain had become one constant contraction, and I pleaded with God to pull me out of my own skin. As I begged for someone to bring me drugs, my friend Tiffany's words came to the forefront and became a welcomed melody floating through my mind. Just when you think you can't possibly survive, and the pain is too much to bear, that's when the baby comes. I had planned on having a natural birth, so I was somewhat prepared. Somewhat. But this was insanity. The intensity and severity of the pain was something I never could have planned for, no matter how much I read or researched. With no time to change my plan to a medicated one, I lay there clenching everything. My eyes, the rails, my stomach, Isaac's hand. Every inch of me was trembling with the most intense pain I'd ever felt. I had Tiffany's words on a rhythmic cycle dancing through my mind. When I think I can't possibly survive, that's when the baby comes. The miracle, the new life. Breathe. It's coming. I can do this. When the pain is too much to bear, that's when the breakthrough happens. I clung to her words as if my very life and breath depended on it, and it very well may have. Again and again in my mind, like a looping record, I repeated, when I think I can't possibly survive, that's when the miracle happens. I sang these words to myself until a cry filled the air as fresh new lungs met earth for the first time. He came. Our miracle. I survived. I burst into tears as my whole body collapsed onto the bed. I reached out my arms and melted into a puddle of praise as they placed him on my chest. Our little Logan Jude. Our long-awaited miracle. I couldn't stop crying as I checked him over. Every piece of his 9-pound, 20-inch frame. 10 fingers, 10 toes, pouty little lips, dark hair. His very name spoke truth and hope into our weary hearts as we stepped out into a new beginning from a dark and isolating chapter of our lives. He was, and continues to be nearly 4 years later, an anthem of restoration, joy, and survival for our family. Our little Logan Jude, whose name means from the hollow we praise, from the dark we continue to hope. Through the pain we keep going, Logan Jude, our anthem. We made it, little one. As I've walked in and out of different seasons and situations these last few years, I feel Tiffany's words in my very breath, infusing life into my dry and weary bones. When we think we are done, when we think it's over, when we can't possibly continue, when all hope is lost, it's then, no earlier, no later, that God leans down and births miracles through our mess. And I'm so thankful to have a front row seat to this one. Chapter 10. First Dream. If you want to change the world, go home and love your family. Mother Teresa. A few summers ago, we spent the weekend at the coast with my dad. It was one of those times Norman Rockwell would have loved. Kids running with sticks, making forts, and roasting hot dogs on a driftwood fire. I took so many pictures I filled up my phone in just a few days. But I wanted to remember everything. I didn't want to forget anything about that trip. The way the days felt, the smell of the fire, the crackle of the wood, the roar of the ocean, and the laughter of the children. I wanted to soak in every detail down to my deepest places. We sat around the fire, talking about the kids and how Ava is just like Isaac and Isaiah is just like me. My dad started talking about he and his sister are the same way, how he's exactly like his mom and my aunt is exactly like my grandpa. I got a bit quieter as he continued to talk. My dad started in on story after story of his parents' adventures. He's an amazing storyteller. He is gifted like that in a way I dream of being. So that day, like that countless others, we sat and listened to his stories. He talked all about his mother's love of travel, the time they spent on Orcas Island and hitting the open road in their RV. As he spoke, I felt my insides break apart a little, but I didn't have more time with her. My grandma and I clicked in ways that I could never explain to anyone else, or even understand myself for that matter. She taught me to paint and to explore. I remember walking on the beach together for hours, looking for shells and sand dollars and pretty agates as the seagulls flew overhead. It was our only time with just the two of us, and I truly treasure those moments I had with her. Something in me seemed to understand something in her, and maybe vice versa too. I guess I will never truly know. Oh, how I wish she were still here. How I wish the dreamer I loved so much hadn't left so soon. To have missed out so much on a woman I barely knew but knew all too well became more devastating as my dad spoke, and more of her heart and her fire came into focus. I'm certain she would have some wisdom for me, some little nuggets of truth that come from wrinkled skin and 40-plus years of marriage. I wonder what she'd tell me now. I wonder what we'd talk about if we could walk on that beach together one more time. I started imagining what our conversations would be like if she were still here. Knowing her, I imagine she would say that you can never go wrong putting others' needs before yours. She would tell me to keep living and serving this beautiful family I have with all my heart, for having them is a dream fulfilled too, my first dream. She'd say that travels will come and I may just end up with that Airstream someday, but today I have a family I love more than words and a husband I could kiss so much I just might suffocate him. And I need to cherish that too. I need to hold it so tight that I never lose sight of the beauty living under this roof. She'd tell me that dreams are best when shared, but they can destroy you from the inside if that's all you're clinging to. So grab hold of what you have with all you've got. Hug them, cherish them, believe in them, and encourage them. Practice thankfulness every day because they are your first dream, and the other dreams are up to God. Be a wife and a mama first and a dreamer second, because your family needs your feet on the ground as much as you need to soar. She'd say that time loving the people in our lives well is never, ever wasted. It's our first calling to love well. She'd say that God is faithful, always faithful, and if something is meant to be, he will bring it about. But for now I'm already living the dream, my first dream. So go cultivate that one instead of longing for what could be. The words I imagine her saying have been echoing in my heart and challenging me to embrace each season as its own. To be thankful for the time at home with little ones underfoot and the house always being messy. She challenged me to choose thankfulness again when they go off to school and I have a bit of breathing room. I feel the intentional choice to embrace with gratitude what is, instead of longing for what could be, will be a battle I fight all my life. I think we can all get trapped there if we let ourselves. Unable to love the life we've been given because we aren't yet experiencing the life we think we want. And if you're a dreamer or a creative or a what's next thinker, the cycle is viciously more difficult. But here's my challenge. Let's look around. Let's hold close what is sacred and true. Let's count those blessings and kiss those cheeks and say those prayers together. Let's choose to love this little life of ours with the fierce passion that brings glory to the giver of all these gifts in the first place. Let's look around our home filled with train tracks or tween magazines or the stillness that comes when waiting for children or watching them go off to college and soak it all in with gratitude and enjoyment. Because whatever season it is we find ourselves in, God has us in it for a purpose and he has a plan for our good. Whether the silence and waiting are shattering your heart or the clutter and chaos are numbing your joy, today is a miracle bursting with possibility, a season that someday you will look back on, see the sweetness, and miss the moments. This little life of ours, these people we share it with, these walls we laugh between, it's all a miracle, and it holds the power to change absolutely everything, if we just choose to let it. Chapter 11. Vision Retreat. How we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. Annie Dillard. How did I get here? I stared at the spreadsheet in a daze, the numbers all blurring together in a mess of nonsense I was never created to understand. All of my projects and businesses have begun because I simply had so much passion that I felt this burning, incessant desire to jump in. I never really stopped to consider exactly what these new responsibilities would entail. But when rubber hit the road, the workload quickly became overwhelming. I simply couldn't do all of the things, and certainly not do them well and efficiently. So on top of the stress and panic I was feeling, the success of my endeavors began teetering on disaster as well. It wasn't long before I started down the path of ungratefulness, bitterness, and depression. During that season, I did anything and everything to keep these passions of mine oiled and running smoothly, until one day I woke up, looked around, stared at my to-do list, and wondered, how did I get here? Why am I doing spreadsheets all day when I can't make sense of them? It's like I'm trying to operate a business in a country where I can't read the language. Save me, please. I'm an outside-the-lines gal. I don't do boxes or order or spreadsheets or chemistry for that matter. So why am I doing any of this? I sat dazed for several minutes in complete disbelief that this, in fact, was my life. And I started to shut down. How did I get here? I thought, and please God, how do I get out? I must mention as a side note that I am well aware that there are going to be jobs we need to get done in our lives that don't light our fire, like sweeping the floor, doing laundry, mailing out packages, or filing a never-ending stack of papers from our boss. I get that for sure. Sometimes things just need to get done, and it's up to us to pull on our boots, get to work, and do it well. But this felt different. This felt like God wanted to get my attention for some reason. It suddenly seemed as if my world had gone off tilt, and I knew something had to change. But how? The questions started swarming my soul in an unpleasant game of what if. And soon I became plagued with this massive guilt because my family had given up so much to support me as I chased these dreams. And yet now I sat overwhelmed, broken, and unfulfilled, and wanting to quit all of them. I needed to figure this out. I needed a reset, and I needed it yesterday. In this moment, Proverbs 29:18 came to mind, and the Message version hit hard on my heart. If people can't see what God is doing, they stumble all over themselves. But when they attend to what he reveals, they are most blessed. The King James version puts it, where there is no vision, people perish. In a single moment, I realized that it had been a very, very long time since Isaac and I had sat down, reevaluated where things were in our businesses, our ministry, and our home, and actually sought God about them. I had been saying yes to so many things. I didn't really know what made sense anymore or why we were even making the decisions we were making. We didn't have a vision for anything, so no wonder I was stumbling all over myself. Knowing we desperately needed to talk and pray together, I asked Isaac if I could set up a weekend away for us to go and seek God for our lives and our businesses. Our anniversary is in January, so it fit perfectly with our annual weekend away and the feelings of new beginnings that accompany the new year. He was game, of course, so I booked a quiet cabin at the Central Oregon Resort, and a few weeks later we were on our way. I'd like to say that those few days flowed together brilliantly, like the swirling of my favorite coffee and vanilla-flavored coconut creamer. But it didn't exactly go that way. Isaac is a doer, and not naturally a rester. While I tend to lean more toward the let's stay in and binge-watch HDTV side of things, neither of us were prepared for a sudden, quiet, reverent, self-reflective weekend away from all of our responsibilities. And actually, it turned out to be way more awkward and difficult than we had initially thought. We hadn't given ourselves space like that in probably the entirety of our marriage. We always went away to do things or be with people, but this was hard. When we first got there, we sat silently for what seemed like forever, and I'm quite certain we were both thinking, what do we do now? But somehow, even after the rocky beginning, this little weekend away felt truer in our souls than 100 weekends before it. We spent the days journaling by the fire, getting massages, and going on walks. We wrote down all the victories and failures from the previous year and our hopes and dreams for the year ahead. We talked about what worked and what didn't, and the things we were scared to bring to the surface. It was beautiful and complicated and hard. There were some tears and many laughs and just a whole lot of breathing room. It's amazing how much we are able to process and accomplish without the constant interruptions of beloved but disruptive little voices. We weren't needed anywhere by anyone, and that was the most freeing part. We were able to dive into the heart of things that we hadn't had time for in way too long. We were able to talk about dreams we both felt the urge to pursue and to seek God together on what he had for our lives. But what struck me most was how this intentional time away helped us carve out new goals and next steps and direction for the days and years ahead. And that, right there, is what held the magic for me. It has been 6 years since that weekend away together, and we now make those getaways a tradition every January. It's become my favorite weekend of the entire year. I count down for it. I get excited, expectant. Instead of waiting and pacing in our room for someone to speak first, the way we did on our first vision retreat weekend, now we start talking about everything as soon as we kiss the kids goodbye and get in the car. Time set apart is almost addictive when you know the power it holds. Life-changing, to say the very least. You can't live in your mission or walk in your calling if you don't know what it is, where you're going, or the steps you need to take to get there. I don't want to overwhelm you, though, so I must let you in on a little secret. The tradition doesn't have to fit a rigid formula or be in a fancy resort. There are no molds to fit, just discoveries to be made. We've done this in snowed-in cabins an hour away, flown to Maui to feel the sunshine on our faces, and house-sat for friends in San Diego while they were waiting to adopt in Africa. The setting is not nearly as important as the intention. The simple act of taking time out of your schedule intentionally and with purpose to unify where you want your marriage and family to go is the win. That's the holy grail. Taking the time to craft a vision for our family and our future is hands down the best tool we've found in our entire marriage. Even if all you have is a friend's rental or a local's rate for the hotel in your town, schedule a time to get away. Make this a priority. The place doesn't matter. It's the purpose that does. But I'll be honest, beaches and cozy fireplaces aren't hurting anything either. Am I right? Over the years, we've calmed down a bit. Our time together is not awkward anymore. It's a breath of fresh air compared to that first weekend. We don't sit inside all day journaling in front of a fireplace or forcing ourselves to read and listen to podcasts if we aren't in the mood. But that has more to do with us learning about us and what brings us joy and helps us grow than it does forfeiting the exercise. Now we simply adventure together and seek God in the process. We do a little journaling, pray together, talk a lot, and make time to read the word. But mostly we just spend time together, having fun and enjoying each other as we press into God for answers, clarity, and direction. We sit by the pool, read, go on walks, eat good food, sleep in. Sometimes we meet up with good friends for coffee or go see a movie. But all the while, no matter what, we have these questions knocking around in our souls that we are determined to wrestle through. And by the time we leave, we know where we are going and what we need to do next to get there. We know what we need to let go of and what we need to invest in. The secret to all of it, though, is to remain pliable to His leading. We can't hold so tight to our own dreams and desires that we aren't able to pivot when needed. We must seek Him first, lean into Him first, listen to Him first. And from that, talk it out, let the dreams flow, process what your next step should look like, and always, always write everything down. Friend, the peace, joy, and passion that have been restored to us after just a few days away a year is unfathomable. God has used these weekends mightily, not only in our businesses, but in our marriage, our parenting, and the overall rhythms of our home. These retreats have clarified our direction and given accountability to our roles within our family and the businesses we run. Since we have a plan and core values to guide our decisions and divide our tasks, I'm no longer drained by responsibilities that I dread or overwhelmed and weary because I said yes to things I didn't have the margin for. Our vision has given us permission to intentionally carve out the things that were weighing us down and hand them over to other people who excel in those areas, like those blasted spreadsheets I was telling you about before. And on the flip side, with the time I was saving by not doing those tasks, I was able to take on more roles and projects that really made me come alive. The things I like to believe I was created to do, like designing materials and events, mentoring leaders, and dreaming up new projects. It's true that there is a time and a place in the beginning of a project or dream when you just have to buck up and do the work. Not every task is going to light your heart on fire, but after the wheels get turning and things are starting to move beyond you, there comes a point when you need to reevaluate your duties and your roles in the project. Being a good steward is about more than just money. It's also about how we spend our time and energy and how we use our skills. So why continue to spend 10 hours on a project that would take someone else 2? Take a deep breath, friend, and hand that task off to someone else who is designed to thrive in jobs like that. Pick up the things on the list that come so easy they don't even feel like work. Because that, friend, is your sweet spot. That's the place you'll come fully alive, freely operating and thriving in your gifts and making a huge impact on those around you and what you are working on. There is something so sacred about taking time from our busy lives and intentionally committing it to grow in Him and connect with each other. We have dubbed this trip our annual vision retreat, and I admit that makes it sound a whole lot more sophisticated than it is. However, the naming was intentional and an essential part of the process. It gave our time away purpose. We could no longer use it as another fun weekend away or a time to sleep in or a chance to have an uninterrupted meal. Even though we did those things and having an interruption-free conversation is pure gold, naming our time away gave it purpose. After experiencing so much freedom and joy from our own vision weekends, there's not much that would bring me greater joy than for you to adopt this as a new tradition of your own. If you have ever found yourself wondering how on earth you got where you are or confused about what to do next, I would encourage you to block out a few days and go on an adventure with God. He has so much He wants to say to you if only you quiet yourself to hear it. And I, for one, cannot wait to hear what it is. Chapter 12. Pruning. I have a vision of people everywhere having the courage to live a life true to themselves instead of the life others expect of them. Greg McKeown. Change is really hard. Saying goodbye can be horrifically brutal, and walking away from something you've poured your heart and soul into for weeks or months or years can feel like an out-of-body experience. Especially if you're the passionate, creative, productivity-driven type, we builders tend to throw ourselves into our work in incredibly intense ways. For us, this passion project we'd taken on was hosting a women's conference to help creative businesswomen learn how to grow successful businesses and build a thriving home life. To add to the complexities that already existed in running an event for hundreds of women, we were also facing challenges of hosting said conference on the opposite side of the country from where we live and dealing with a retreat center that didn't allow children. What started as a simple gathering for entrepreneurial women to connect, grow, and be equipped in their businesses and inspired in their faith quickly took on a life of its own. We had team members scattered across the country in different stages of life, and we had acquired the most random collection of things that had very little purpose outside of the conference world. And somewhere along the way, I became the proud tenant of a huge storage unit in Rome, Georgia, to house all of this randomness. How on earth was this my life? All of this was going on in what sometimes felt like an alternate universe, while I plugged away at raising kiddos, supporting my hubby, and running my own businesses from our home in the Pacific Northwest. Looking back, the insanity of it all makes me burst out in laughter. I mean, none of the other moms I knew were helping manage leaders in the Philippines and hosting events 3,000 miles away, but that was my normal, and I loved it. As weird as it sounded when I explained it to strangers, it was my life, and it didn't seem one bit odd to me then. I was just following the next thing God had placed in my heart to do, and for years His hand and grace was on it so thick I could feel it. When we follow His lead, I've discovered that things that should be hard have a grace and ease to them. Not that they aren't difficult tasks, because they definitely are, but there's an almost tangible grace that covers you, and for years I seem to be walking right in the middle of it. 1 Corinthians 2:9 promises that no eye has seen, no ear has heard, and no mind has imagined what God has prepared for those who love Him. And after walking out this assignment, this verse suddenly had a bit of comical undertone. Never in a million years would I have guessed that I'd be a girl running a worldwide ministry with a constantly sold-out conference across the country and maintaining a storage unit in the middle of Georgia. But somehow that's the position I found myself in. I never doubted that the conference was something we were supposed to do. It always felt right. It felt like home. Until one day, it just didn't. It was almost as though the grace for it had suddenly lifted, and I started to feel like I had no idea what to do with myself anymore. What used to be done easily, almost effortlessly, suddenly felt like a huge weight on my shoulders. I began stumbling all over myself and second-guessing everything. Looking back, I recognized this for what it was, having a lack of peace. But I didn't understand it then. I just knew things had massively shifted. Where I had previously been excited and passionate, exhaustion and pressure seemed to be taking up residence instead. I started to feel unsettled on my insides and simultaneously guilty for dreading what God had obviously put His hand on for so many years. I was having trouble sleeping, and not in the I'm so excited I can't sleep sort of way. This was more like I'm so stressed I can barely breathe kind of way. My health turned sideways, and panic attacks became a regular occurrence. I stopped smiling and dancing, and singing in the shower turned into sob fest as the warm water washed over my puffy eyes. My relationship started to suffer, my creativity was stifled, and for the first time in a really long time, I didn't even feel like me anymore. I felt trapped and scared and like a complete and utter failure. I knew hundreds of women who'd have loved to trade places with me and host this event, so that just made it all worse. All of a sudden, feeling like I couldn't handle it anymore seemed to cover me in a blanket of guilt and shame. What would people think? What would they say? Who will I be if I don't do this? The questions and pressure plagued my heart in a way I'd never experienced before, and the weight was a new kind of heavy. Everything I'd been working for, all that had been built, striving for, and wanted was now so large that instead of freeing me, I was being crushed under the demands and responsibilities of it all. And worse, managing it all felt like shackles, keeping me from what God had been inviting me and my family into next. As John Acuff says, I was trapped in a cage I'd built myself, and now depression and anxiety had found their way in too. There were so many things God had put on my heart, but my capacity was limited. I couldn't possibly start something new and continue the duties of running the conference with excellence at the same time. Unless, of course, I never slept or saw my family. And then what would be the point of running a ministry to help women build successful businesses and thriving families if I couldn't do it myself? My heart ached and churned inside me at the magnitude of it all. The people it would affect, the businesses they ran, the families, the 200-plus small groups we had around the world that included nearly 25,000 people. What would they all think? Or would they even care? The thought of failing them, or on the flip side, being invisible and not even noticed, was nearly crippling me. I found myself withdrawing in every sense of the word as I processed it all. I couldn't answer my phone calls, I couldn't post on social media. Some days I couldn't even get out of bed, although I guess that's not true, because when you have 3 kids depending on you for getting through the day, you get out of bed whether you feel like it or not. But I was empty, broken from the inside out, and the light and bubbly dancing in the kitchen self that used to overflow out of me had been snuffed and silenced. It felt like a lose-lose situation. Even though I know God has our best in mind, it certainly didn't feel like it during these days. I feared all the things all at once. But I feared for my own family the most. How could I tell them it wasn't worth it anymore? How could I look them in the eye and say, you know all those nights Mommy worked, all the money we poured into this ministry, all of those weeks away from you that I'd spent leading events? Well, it's all a loss. Mommy doesn't want to do it anymore. Picturing this conversation brought tears to my eyes and gut-wrenching burden to my soul. I couldn't walk away from this. I just couldn't do that to them. They'd given up so much for me and for pursuit. How selfish could I possibly be? A few months after I first felt the tug to shut down the conference, I was pruning one of the apple trees in our orchard, as we do every winter. I sat among the almost naked limbs as the crisp, cold wind whipped across my face, and I hacked away at the branches. One by one, I watched these budding little twigs fall to the ground. There were hundreds of them, each full of life with fresh cotton-candied pink buds ready to burst forth from their green buds in the coming weeks. Each cut I made left a bright green and white scar on the tree, proving there was no death in those branches. The limbs I was cutting were fully alive, strong, thriving, and dripping with potential fruit. In an instant, I heard the Lord speak to my heart. See, I'm not always asking you to just cut away things that are unhealthy and dying. It's not just the things that drain your heart and leave you emotionally and financially bankrupt that need to be reevaluated. Sometimes I'm asking you to cut off pieces that are actually alive and thriving, because sometimes those things are sucking the energy from the most important places, the better investments. Immediately, a warm peace flooded my body, and in that moment, I knew I had been hearing him clearly all along. The conference wasn't a bad thing. It was actually a great thing, a gloriously fruitful thing. But it had fulfilled what the Lord had wanted it to, and I needed to be as faithful to obey when he asked me to walk away as I was when he asked me to start. And it was now time to close the door on that season and put that energy into other dreams God had been whispering to my heart. As another limb bursting with buds fell to the ground, I began to cry. Relief and peace filled the places in my heart where burdened responsibility and paranoia resided moments before. Goodness, nature is such a beautiful glimpse into the character of God, the seasons, the cycles, the undeniable rhythms. Isn't it amazing how the very best thing you can do for fruit trees is cutting off all the suckers during winter? And how interesting is it that they are even called suckers in the first place, since they are sucking life from the other parts of the tree that need it to produce fruit? Later that day, Isaac initiated a conversation as we sat down for lunch. Babe, what would you do if I said you didn't have to do the conference anymore? His blunt words shocked me, and it took a minute to process the magnitude of his question just hours after my pruning encounter. I sat there silenced and in complete disbelief that he was bringing up the subject. Under my breath, I remember speaking these words. I would cry tears of happiness and instantly feel like 1,000,000 pounds were just lifted off my shoulders. I stared down at my plate using my fork to move around my food. Without hesitation, he replied confidently, "Well, that's what we're going to do." "You're saying I can walk away?" I thought. Instantly, I felt like I could breathe a full breath for the first time in months, if not years. Upon hearing those words, the stress and anxiety that had been suffocating me lifted. I don't think I will ever forget that moment as long as I live. My word, I love that man. Looking back, the pressure, stress, depression, and lack of peace should have been warning signs to get the heck out. And if you're currently feeling any of those about your situation, maybe they should be for you too. But I've never been the first one to hit the brakes on anything. When I start something, I finish it. Usually long past the time that's healthy to. My over-responsible personality and my addiction to productivity don't let me entertain the thoughts of walking away from something, especially something that is extremely successful. But what I'm learning is that sometimes when your heart feels as though it's drying up, it's not that you failed. It's that God is telling you to move into a new season. Within 36 hours of my conversation with Isaac about shutting down the conference, my phone rang. It was a woman from the storage unit in Georgia. "Ma'am, we've had a flood, and your unit is a complete loss. We have been given 24 hours to evacuate the premises and have everything out of all the units. There was nothing we could do. The entire facility was buried in 4 feet of water, and now we need you to get your stuff out. What do you want to do?" "What?" I said. "I live on the West Coast. I can't possibly get all of my stuff out within 24 hours. The lady seemed a bit shocked that I was so far away, despite the fact that she was looking at my rental agreement and could see my address. I hung up the phone in complete disbelief. "You've got to be kidding me," I thought. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry, and in the end, I did a little of both. I laughed at the insane improbability of our storage facility, which had been advertised as 100% waterproof, flooding. And even funnier, flooding from a stream behind the building named Little Dry Creek. Nearly 6 years worth of equipment, decor, table settings, backgrounds, projection screens, and who knows what else had accumulated in that 10 by 10 space. Somewhere between $10,000 and $15,000 of stuff. Lost in an instant. And to top it off, the insurance company, in true insurance company fashion, found a loophole to escape covering any of it. They didn't pay a single dime. Through it all, though, we felt the hand of God was at work and that this was a divine confirmation we were walking in the right direction. And it was finally time to prune this sucker, too. I wish I could say that the events that followed were as confirming and divine as the events that unfolded to set it into motion, but that's just not the case. It turns out that when you do anything that involves other humans, those other humans almost always have opinions, and it's not always awesome. While the majority of the women in pursuit were overwhelmingly sweet and supportive, this massive change in the direction of the ministry didn't go without opposition. When I began to share my heart and what God was leading us into, it felt as if I'd invited everyone else to weigh in with their opinions, which I had not. I began to realize that when God speaks a direction into our lives, the enemy will quickly come and bombard us with many other voices in an effort to cause confusion and derail us from our destinies. Not all voices are bad, but it does take discernment and prayer to weed through the words. If you're ever in a similar situation, remember to filter the words of others through God's character, His word and His truths. Take into account where these voices are coming from. Remember that 5,000, 12, 3, 1 thing we talked about? That is very applicable here. Are they random strangers, acquaintances, or a trusted confidant whose relationship with God you can trust? After you've filtered the voices and the verbiage, you can keep the gold and throw out the garbage. The biggest tool for all of it is to hold fast to what is true. Cling to the one who led you into this decision and what he is inviting you into, because no one else has to answer for what you've been given to steward. There will always be naysayers, those who say you can't hear God or that you've heard him wrong, but sometimes those voices are the exact confirmation you're on the right path, because why would the enemy want to discourage you from the wrong path? Opposition is often confirmation that you're going in the right direction. So friend, I guess what I'm saying in all this is to keep going. People who say you can't hear God are wrong. His sheep know his voice. You know his voice. So hang in there. Lean in. Get closer. Feel his breath on your face as he whispers the way of what's to come. Quiet your heart. Open your hands. Let go of what he's asking you to. Walk away. A door closed isn't a loss. It's a launching pad to what's next. So hold fast to him. Lean in close as he leads. He won't ever steer you wrong. And he's probably getting ready to open the floodgates on that part of your tree that most needs tending. Chapter 13. Bridge Builders. Be kind, for everyone is fighting a hard battle. Ian McLaren. Maybe we are supposed to go on a road trip over spring break, I said in passing, almost hoping Isaac wouldn't hear me. He heard me. What? He said. We can't afford that. Why would we do that? I need to see them, I said. I need to make things right again. I wish I could say that I was always this eager for reconciliation, that the right thing to do always comes easy for me, and every thought I have towards people who have wronged me is holy. But that's simply not the case. This particular day, though, I was overwhelmed with a deep need to take action in a relationship that had gone silent, and I knew that being face-to-face was the only way to rebuild the bridge. This world isn't always as kind as we wish it was, and sometimes the people closest to us aren't either. The tensions in a friendship can be amplified all the more when you are working in the same industry, targeting the same clients, or creating similar products. Labels usually meant for competitors are suddenly sitting across the table from you, offering you a cup of coffee and asking you about your kids. Business and friendship together are a strange phenomenon, one that takes careful treading to navigate well. But, as is usually the case, the things that take the most work and have the potential to break our hearts the most are often worth the most amount of work and time. This isn't a shiny, happy part of our story that I love sharing with people. It's extremely embarrassing and even a bit shameful. But I feel it would be a disservice to hide it and thus hold back even a glimpse of hope for others facing similar situations. So here it goes. Isaac and I have been through a lot of relational hurt during our married years. I'm not exactly sure what that says about us. Maybe we wear our hearts too loosely on our sleeves or trust too soon or are extremely naive. Maybe we are dumb or too sensitive or we have giant flashing signs on our foreheads that blink, "Walk all over us, we can take it." However you unpack it, we've had more than our fair share of friends who've decided that integrity wasn't their game after all. When push came to shove, they just haven't chosen to do the right thing. We've been stolen from, lied to, betrayed, walked away from, mocked, and yes, even excommunicated, if that's even a real thing anymore, which it certainly feels like it is. And for two people who will lay it all down on the altar of integrity, this not choosing to do things with integrity is a particularly vicious poison. Sadly, through it all, we have become masters of self-protection. Over the years, we constructed a fairly secure wall around our hearts, and our home for that matter. For years, it was all we could do to keep our hearts pumping, let alone open them up to another potentially hazardous soul. Plus, the strength and control that we harvested from our isolated lifestyle became a deceptive confirmation that our choice to wall off humanity was a wise one. We were safe inside our walls, and that brought a welcomed, albeit harmful, sense of peace. Well, maybe not peace, but security. We were safe. We were extremely lonely, but we were safe. And in those years, we were willing to trade in nearly anything to feel safe. As sad as this was, this new routine quickly developed into a familiar rhythm that was too comforting to let go. When you wall off your heart and burn bridges instead of build them, you are guaranteed a few things. Security and safety were the big ones for us, but they came at the extremely high and unexpected price of isolation, depression, and severe loneliness. A few years ago, one friendship in particular took a hefty blow, at least to our hearts. I honestly don't even know if this friend of ours felt they did anything wrong. And I guess it doesn't even matter if they did, because I felt it. Isaac and I both did. We felt overwhelmingly wronged. Despite our giant barrier walls, betrayal had infiltrated our world again from someone we had actually welcomed and trusted to come inside our walls of protection. It's hard to know what you'll do in any particular situation until you're in it. You believe you'll act responsibly and carry through with every ounce of forgiveness you claim on Sunday mornings. But when the layers peel off and the ick is exposed, repairing relationships doesn't always seem worth it. And even though it felt like a hurricane was hovering over my insides, on the surface, I appeared as calm and peaceful as a lake in the early morning. As countless people begged me to drag their names through the mud or cut them off completely, something in my heart defended them. Some piece of me knew there was a deeper story playing out. I just didn't know what it was yet. After the story of what had happened was revealed, it was nearly a year before we spoke again. Their family had their lives and we had ours. We were both navigating the throes of whatever had found its way into our homes, and we were both just doing the best we could to steward it all. In fact, that phrase became something I clung to fiercely in this season, that we were all doing the best we could. In our little perfect worlds, with our Nicholas Spark romances and our storybook endings, it's easy to be thrown off kilter when life doesn't go our way, or worse, when relationships don't. We can so easily be tempted to run, hide, cut off, or at our very worst, talk horribly about people to others. But none of that is what we truly want, is it? We don't want to be the girl dragging someone else's name through the mud, or be unable to take a joke or forgive or move on. We wouldn't want a friend like that. Yet so many of us insist on being a friend like that. Hurts, offenses, and bad blood don't just happen. We aren't born feeling those things. They have to be let in. Oftentimes we blame these poisonous feelings on others, but the truth is, it's not their fault. We hold the keys to the doors of our hearts, and we hold the power to keep things out and let things in. Bitterness came knocking fiercely the night we discovered what had happened, and every night after for that matter. But something in me couldn't let it in. Someone might call it being naive, but I think compassion feels like a better fit. I don't mean to sound super spiritual, but all I could picture was Jesus at the Passover supper. As we've discussed already, I'm a feeler and a visionary. So when I picture something, I picture all the things. And I feel them as if I were walking through it all firsthand. I'm the one crying at all of the commercials and plugging my ears to the evening news. I just imagine things so vividly that I must protect my heart from the stories I let in. The same thing happens when I read the Bible, or any other story for that matter. So when I think about Jesus in the Last Supper, I picture the room he and his disciples were in, and the people around the table. I picture the bread they broke and the clothes they wore. I imagine how it all smelled, how it all felt. And then I picture him. Our Savior. I picture Jesus seated with the 12 people who were his dearest, closest friends on earth. I picture the conversations and the silence that fell when he mentioned someone at the table would betray him. I picture the panicked look on their faces, and I picture the grace on his. And as all of this played out in my mind's eye, I instantly knew why this offense was so hard for me to pick up. Even when everyone around me was encouraging me to do just that, it was grace. It was all just grace. If Jesus could invite someone to his last meal on earth knowing that person would betray him, then certainly I have no room or right to hold on to the offense of being betrayed by a friend. Even though I had held hurt and carried contempt for this situation, I knew it wasn't right to do so. I knew it was time to lay it down, to let it go, and to build a bridge instead. A few weeks later, we loaded up the whole family, all five of us in our black SUV, and hit the freeway. Games loaded, snack packs, hearts open and full of peace, knowing what we had to do. Nearly 900 miles and 20 hours later, between full bladders and hungry bellies, we arrived. As we greeted each other at breakfast the next morning, I didn't exactly know what to expect. Would we talk about it? Would they apologize? Would we move on like it never happened? Even though the questions were looming in my mind, I knew I wasn't there for an apology or a ceremony of forgiveness. It just didn't matter anymore. I loved them like family, and I didn't need to hear an apology. I had already decided that no matter what